Radio on, sometimes honking at Doc for being a pedestrian. Pretty soon he spotted a dolled-up surfer's cabana across the street with a 59 Cadillac hearse parked in front, with its windows blacked out, and its chrome, from what Doc could see, rigorously authenticated, and a couple of longboards where the stiffs used to ride. He went over to have a look. All at once something flickered at the edge of his vision, like the things you see in houses that are supposed to be deserted. He ducked down behind the hearse, reaching for his Smith, just as Adrian Prussia emerged from a cone of streetlight ahead. What? Either Doc had hallucinated killing Adrian, which was always possible, or only wounded him, and Adrian had managed to go out the back and down to the beach and make his way as far as the next path up through the ice plant to the street again. Fucking hippies, you're so easy to fool. Adrian actually didn't sound that good, but Doc at the moment couldn't afford much wishful thinking. Go on, Adrian. You can still get away. Go in peace, man. Don't let me keep you or nothing. Not after what you did to Puck. I'm coming over there, asshole. Doc crouched beneath the last of the sky glow, considering possibilities like rolling under the hearse and trying to shoot Adrian in the foot. Maybe you'll have time for one shot, but you're going to have to stand up in the open to take it. And it'll have to be perfect. Meantime, I'm going to blow your head off the minute I see it. From back down Gummo Mark's way, Doc heard sirens now. Seemed like more than one and getting louder. See? I called you an ambulance and everything. Thanks, said Adrian. Mighty thoughtful of you. And fell on his face in the street. And when Doc finally edged out to have a look, appeared not to be moving. Dead enough. Doc looked back and saw flashing lights in front of Adrian's house, an ambulance and two or three black and whites. Having a word with Bigfoot, no doubt. Better just keep on with this evening stroll here, up Gummo Mark's way. Wasn't like he was running away from the scene of a crime or nothing, was it? They'd see Adrian's body, they'd either come after Doc or they wouldn't. Pop him now, pop him later. What did it matter? In theory, he knew he'd just killed two people, and that months, maybe years of hassle awaited him. But then again, it wasn't him back there in the street. He was trying to remember the lyrics to The Bright Elusive Butterfly of Love, when behind him he heard a roar nearly as melodious, which he recognized as a V8 exhaust by way of a cherry bomb glass pack. It was Bigfoot, who slowed, paused next to Doc, and rolled his window down. You coming? You bet. Doc got in. Where's the El Camino? In the shop. Needs rings. This is Chastity's. And we're gonna split now? Quit worrying, Sportello. It's all taken care of. Palabra? Bigfoot put three fingers up like the Boy Scout oath, except they were sort of, well, bent. Semi-palabra. Bigfoot didn't speak again till they were on the San Diego freeway headed north. You're right. I know I should have done it myself. That's between you and whoever, man. Your partner's ghost, maybe. Bigfoot turned on the car radio, which was tuned, probably welded, to an easy listening station. Some sort of Glen Campbell medley was in progress. Bigfoot and his mind remained back on GMW. Vinny was out here from New York, you know. It took me a week before I could understand anything he was saying. Not so much the accent as the tempo. Then I was starting to talk like that, too. And nobody could understand me. I still keep asking myself now if I couldn't have bought him some time that day. But as usual, he was too fast. We came down to GMW on a tip he said he had. And before I even stopped the unit, he was already out the door and into the house. I knew what was going to happen. I was calling in for backup when I heard the shots. For a while, I just kept stupidly yelling, "Vinny, you in there?" And he was. And he wasn't. Poor fucker. Doomed to a bad end sooner or later. Crazy as they make them. But my back never felt so safe before or since. Hard to explain to a civilian, but I owed him so much. Bigfoot drove for a while. Doc said, "You know what? Total honesty, I thought it was you." "Though what was me? That I was the one who did Vinny? My own partner? Jesus, Bortello. Don't you ever stop with this paranoid pothead routine? Call it what you want, Bigfoot. It's a normal reaction, ain't it? How do I ever know what goes on with any of you people? All creeping around behind your blue steel curtain there, playing your fucked up power games." Bigfoot didn't answer, but there were times Doc could hear his silences. And this one was saying, "Too much you can't know about, so fuck off." Might as well keep pushing it. Like, maybe the department had you both on the same shit list. I mean, being his partner and all. Cashing him in would be a good way to get your own cred back, wouldn't it? "You don't know what you're talking about. Thanks so much for your concern, but I've got it covered, okay? I'm a Renaissance cop, remember? I get to be all things to all interested parties here." "No, Bigfoot. No. You know what I think you really are? Is you're the LAPD's own Charlie Manson. You're the screaming evil nutcase right at the heart of that little cop kingdom that nothing and nobody can reach. And God help him if you wake up someday in a mood to bring it all down, 'cause then it'll be run, copper, run. And when the gun smoke clears, there'll be songbirds building their nests in all the empty corners of the glass house. Plus broken glass and shit." Looking pleased with his character update, Bigfoot accelerated to 85 or 90 miles per hour and went gleefully, one might almost say suicidally, weaving in and out of traffic in traditional freeway style. Onto Chastity Bjornson's car radio came the drawling, irreverent brass and sub-hip syncopation of a Herb Alpert arrangement, which Doc realized with growing horror was a cover of Ohio Express's Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. He reached for the volume knob, but Bigfoot was ahead of him. "If you're interested," Doc said, "Puck told me it was him that fired the actual shots. Adrian got paid for doing it and took the rap, and then they cut him loose. The usual. But maybe you knew all that. Maybe you also knew who inside the LAPD was paying Adrian to do it." Bigfoot looked over at Doc and then back at the freeway. "Either I do know, which means I won't tell you, or I don't know, in which case you'll never find out on your own." "Right, forgot. I'm just a stupid-ass civilian out there drawing unfriendly fire." "My job offer was still on the table. Join up, maybe you'll learn a thing or two. You might even be academy material." They were nearing the Canoga Park exit, and Bigfoot put on his signal. "Don't tell me," Doc said. "Yes, we had to impound your short once again. It was parked illegally down there in Adrian's neighborhood." "Wait, you're letting me drive away? You're not taking me in or booking me or nothing? How are we supposed to square this?"
"Square what?"
"All that, you know," angling his head back in the direction of Gummo Mark's Way and making vague blam-blam gestures with thumb and index finger.
"No idea what you're trying to say, Sportello. Something you've been hallucinating, no doubt."
"I don't get it. Adrian must have been one of the department's key assets. How are they just gonna shine it on that he's been eliminated?"
"All I can safely tell you is that Adrian was getting cute. Way too cute. But don't press me for details. Just rest assured the boys are only too happy to be rid of him.
And Puck, too. Because now they can say Vinny's murder has been ID'd at last, met a violent end, but justice was served. The clearance rate jumps another notch, and we pick up X million more from the feds. Everybody downtown's what you would call groovy with that. Maybe I should take a small commission.
But that would put you on the payroll, wouldn't it?
Right. Then maybe you could just toss me a small tip instead. It's these cases I'm working on. Puck was kind enough to mention that all that commotion at Chick Planet Massage that day was really to cover a hit on Glenn Sharlock. Said it never was about Mickey. Did you know any of that?
Of course you did.
Why didn't you tell me?
Bigfoot smiled. Did that slip my mind? Jeepers, I'm getting worse than a doper. Yes, well, Mickey just stumbled into something he shouldn't have seen. And the boys and the John Wayne outfits panicked and hustled him away for a while. Then the feds found out. Here's an acid-head billionaire about to give all his money away, and of course they had their own ideas on how to spend it. Being tight with this golden fang of yours by way of skag-related activities in the Far East, they got Mickey programmed into Ojai for a little brain work. Looks like they got what they wanted, too. My bad luck and lousy timing. Man sees the light, tries to change his life. My one big chance to rescue somebody like that from the clutches of the system, and I'm too late. And now Mickey's back to them old greedy-ass ways.
Well, maybe not, Sportello. What goes around may come around, but it never ends up exactly the same place. You ever notice? Like a record on a turntable. All it takes is one groove's difference, and the universe can be on into a whole nother song.
Been doing a little acid there, Bigfoot?
Not unless you mean the stomach variety. At the lot, Bigfoot paused in front of the office, went in, and came back out with a release form.
You can start this. I'm just gonna go check something out. I'll be right back to sign off on everything.
With the glass pack pulsating like the bass line of an up-tempo blues, he rolled away into glaring mercury vapor light saturating a lot full of outward and visible civic annoyance. He wasn't gone that long, but Doc began to feel nervous anyway. Doper's ESP again, no doubt, which only got more intense when he saw his car in some totally unreal gesture of civility being brought right up to the office door sill.
"What's this?" said Doc.
"Drive safely," advised Bigfoot, touching an invisible hat brim. He got back in the Impala, rev the engine throbbingly a number of times, and prepared to depart.
"Oh, I nearly forgot."
"Yeah, Bigfoot?"
"Chastity and I had an appraiser over last weekend to look at some pieces. And that Wyatt Earp mustache cup? Turns out it's real."
"Yeah. You could have kept that sucker and turned it in for big bucks." Cackling sadistically, he roared away. Pulling out of the lot, Doc happened to take a sharper left than he meant to, over a piece of curb onto the street, and heard an ominous thump from the trunk. His first thought was that something on the vibrasonic had come loose. He pulled over and got out to look.
"Ah, Bigfoot, you motherfucker!"
How could he have expected the old mad dog to be satisfied with only Adrian and Puck? They'd all been tools in somebody else's crib, including Doc. Now he had 20 kilos of No. 4 China White bouncing around in his trunk. Bigfoot, no doubt at this very moment, was putting word out to that effect. And once again Doc was bait, with only the keen brain power of the LAPD between him and incorporation into some freeway overpass. He had to ditch this Asian shit someplace secure and fairly quick. Keeping to surface streets, Doc headed east, pulled in briefly at a shopping mall, went around back by the dumpsters, and found 2 cardboard cartons about the same size, put Bigfoot's dope in one, and fill the other with garbage sacks and renovation debris, and then proceeded to Burbank Airport, parked near a phone booth, and used up most of a roll of quarters trying to get patched through a mobile operator to the two-way radio in Tito's limo, on the off chance Tito was working late.
Inez, how many times I got to swear to you? It ain't the name of a horse. It ain't a bookie's phone number. It's only this cocktail waitress.
No, no, Tito. It's me. Doc hollering on account of the connection.
Inez, you sound funny.
It's Doc, and I need an untraceable ride.
Oh, it's you, Doc.
I know it's short notice, but if you could find me some kind of falcon.
Hey, I don't do no pimping, man.
This went on for a while. Jet takeoffs and landings kept interrupting. Reception faded in and out. Doc was obliged to dig up more quarters, and soon found himself screaming through his teeth like Kirk Douglas in Champion, 1949. But they finally worked it out that Adolfo would be there within the half hour with another ride, and Doc was ready for phase two of his plan, which required rapidly smoking some Hawaiian weed rolled into a joint of a certain diameter and bringing the box full of dumpster trash to the counter of Kahuna Airlines, where he bought a ticket for Honolulu on a dubious credit card he'd taken once in lieu of a fee, checked the dummy carton in his baggage, and watched it roll away into what Stewardy Eye of his acquaintance had described as a bureaucratic nightmare, hoping it would take the Fang some time to sort out.
You're sure it'll be safe now?
You've asked me that several times, sir.
Call me Larry. Is it only that you guys have the worst reputation in the industry for losing shit, so I'm a little anxious is all?
Sir, we can assure you.
Oh, forget that. What I really need to know about now is the land of the pygmies.
Excuse me?
You have a flight atlas handy? Look it up. Pygmies, land of the...
This being a California airline, with standing instructions to be as accommodating as possible, somebody in a uniform and short haircut soon appeared with a flight atlas and stood leafing through it, growing perplexed and apologetic.
Whichever of these it is, sir, it has no landing facilities.
But I want to go to the land of the pygmies,
Doc kept sort of whining.
But, sir, the land of the pygmies seems to have no, runways.
Well, then, they'll just have to build one, won't they? Give me that.
He seized the PA microphone from behind the desk as if it were on some short-wave frequency being attentively monitored by pygmies waiting for a message just like this.
All right, now listen up,
he began barking orders to an imaginary pygmy construction crew.
Is it a what? Of course it's a Boeing shorty. Got a problem with that?
Security people began to drift into Doc's visual perimeter. Supervisorial personnel were hovering in a sort of sick fascination. Customers, queued behind Doc, found reasons to step out of line and wander away. He unplugged the microphone, set his hat at a jaunty Sinatroid angle, and in a not totally embarrassing lounge voice began to work the crowd, singing,
There's a sky full of hearts, broken in two, some flying full fare, some non-revenue. All us bit actors, me, him, and you, playing our parts in a sky full of hearts, up there in first class, $10 wine, playing canasta and doing so fine. Suddenly, uh-oh, there's a no-smoking sign. That's how it starts in a sky full of hearts to the roar of the fan jet. You went your own way. I'll sure miss you, and yet there ain't much to say. Now I'm flying alone. In economy class, drinking the cheap stuff,
till I'm flat on my ass, watching my torch song fall off the charts. But that's how it goes in a sky full of hearts.
This tune had in fact been on the radio briefly a couple weeks back. So by the last 8 bars, there were actually people singing along. Some lead, some backup, and stepping in rhythm. Enough witnesses to keep the Fang busy for a while. Doc, meanwhile, had slowly been making his way toward the exit, and now, tossing the mic to the nearest customer, slid away out the door and ran back to find Adolfo behind the wheel of a 442 Olds with the motor idling in the space next to his own car, and on the radio, Rocio Durcal with her heart about to break. Doc got in his car, and they pulled out of the lot, drove till they found a reasonably dark street in North Hollywood, and quickly shifted the 20-kilo inconvenience from Doc's trunk to the Olds. Doc handed his own keys to Adolfo. "They'll have this plate number in the car description. All I need's like an hour or two. Try to keep 'em busy as long as you can."
"I was going to switch after a while with my cousin Antonio Bugs Ruiz, who the word peligro is not in his phrase book. Plus, he don't give a shit," replied Adolfo.
"More than I can repay, vato."
"Tito thinks it's him that owes you. You guys work it out. Don't bring me in."
This Oldsmobile didn't have power steering, and well before he reached the San Diego freeway, Doc felt like he was back in P.E. class, doing push-ups for Mr. Schiffer. On the bright side, nobody seemed to be following him. Yet. He still had to work out the interesting question, how does one keep 20 kilos of heroin hidden and safe for a short period of time, when vast resources are being mobilized to discover it, repossess it, and exact retribution for ripping it off? Back in Gordita, looking for some place to park, he happened to pass Dinas's place, which was still decorated with heaps of soggy plaster and splintered laths and wiring and plastic pipes, like somebody had spilled a giant bowl of fucked-up novelty cereal. And with Dinas, Doc knew, living somehow down in the middle of it, bootlegging the power he needed for the fridge and TV and the lava lamp off of the neighbors next door, until the landlord, who in any case was vacationing down in Baja, could figure out how to collect enough insurance to pay for repairs, nothing was likely to change here. "Psychedelic," exclaimed Doc, "a perfect stash site." It was about this point that he noticed he was wearing only one huarache anymore. The bars hadn't closed yet, and Dinas didn't seem to be home. Keeping an ear out for fun seekers in the vicinity, Doc brought the carton with the heroin inside it down into the remains of Dinas' living room and hid it behind a section of collapsed ceiling, draping the giant plastic rag of what had been Chico's waterbed over it. Only then did he happen to notice that the carton he'd pulled out of that dumpster in the dark had once held a 25-inch color TV set, a detail he had no cause to think about till next day, when he dropped in on Dinas about lunchtime and found him sitting, to all appearances serious and attentive, in front of the professionally packaged heroin, now out of its box, and staring at it, as it turned out he'd been doing for some time.
"It said on the box it was a television set," Dinas explained.
"And you couldn't resist. Didn't you check first to see if there was something you could plug in?"
"Well, I couldn't find any power cord, man, but I figured it could be some new type of set. You didn't need one?"
"Uh-huh. And what, why was he pursuing this, were you watching when I came in?"
"See, my theory is it's like one of these educational channels. A little slow, maybe, but no worse than high school."
"Yes, Dinas, thanks. I will just have a hit off of that, if you don't mind."
"And dig it, Doc.
If you watch long enough, see how it begins to sort of change?
Alarmingly, Doc, after a minute or two, did find minute modulations of color and light intensity beginning to appear among the tightly taped layers of plastic. He sat down next to Dinas, and they passed the roach back and forth, eyes glued to the package. Jade, Ashley, showed up with a giant thermos full of orange Julius and paper cups and a bag of Cheetos. "Lunch," she greeted them, "and color-coordinated, too, and, whoa, what the fuck is that? It looks like smack."
"Nah," said Dinas. "I think it's like a documentary."
They all sat there in a row, sipping, crunching, and gazing. Finally, Doc tore himself away.
"I hate to be the bad guy, but I've got to do a repo on this." "Just till this part's over?
Till we see what happens?" added Jade.
Doc had been on the phone with Crocker Fenway, Japonica's dad, who had called around noon, interrupting a dream Doc was having about the schooner Golden Fang, which had reassumed its old working identity, as well as its real name, Preserved. Somehow the Zen exorcist Coy had told Doc about, the one who dezombified the board's mansion up in Topanga, had also been at work on the schooner, clearing away the dark residues of blood and betrayal, conducting the unquiet spirits of those who'd been tortured and assassinated aboard her safely to rest. Whatever evil had possessed her was now gone for good. It was towards sunset, after some rain. The dark lid of clouds rolled back a few fingers' widths from the horizon, revealing a strip so clear and luminous that even homebound traffic out on the freeway was slowing down for it. Sancho and Doc were out on the beach. Last apricot light flooded landward and brought their shadows uphill, past the lifeguard towers, into terraces of bougainvillea, rhododendrons, and ice plant. Sancho was giving a kind of courtroom summary, as if he'd just been handling a case.
"Yet there is no avoiding time, the sea of time, the sea of memory and forgetfulness, the years of promise gone and unrecoverable, of the land almost allowed to claim its better destiny only to have the claim jumped by evildoers known all too well, and taken instead and held hostage to the future we must live in now forever. May we trust that this blessed ship is bound for some better shore, some undrowned Lemuria, risen and redeemed, where the American fate mercifully failed to transpire."
From the beach, Doc and Sancho saw her, or thought they saw her, heading out to sea, all sails glowing and spread. Doc wanted to believe that Coy, Hope, and Amethyst were somehow on board, bound for safety, at the rail waving. He almost saw them. Sancho was not so sure. They began to bicker about it. At which point, Crocker had fire-gonged Doc back into another petroleum-scented day at the beach.
"Not me," Doc croaked into the receiver.
"Sure been a long time."
The Prince of Palos Verdes, way too chirpy for this time of the morning.
"Just a second while I see about a pulse here."
Doc rolling off the couch and staggering into the kitchen. He wandered in small loops, trying to remember what he was supposed to be doing. Somehow got water on to boil, instant coffee in a cup, and after a while also remembered that the phone was off the hook.
"Howdy, and your name was..."
Crocker reintroduced himself.
"Some people I know have lost something, and there's a theory developing that you might know where it is."
Doc drank half a cup of coffee, scalded his mouth, and finally said,
"You wouldn't also happen to be one of the principals in this, man?"
"Not that it's any of your business, Mr. Sportella, but over the years I've become known in this town as something of a fixer. My problem today is that you may be holding in gratuitous bailment an item whose owners wish to reclaim possession. And if this can be arranged quickly enough, there will be no penalties attached.
Like, I won't get wasted or nothing?
Luckily for you, that's a sanction they prefer to exercise only against their own. Given the sorts of business they engage in, without absolute trust in one's associates, all may too swiftly revert to anarchy. Outsiders like yourself tend to get the benefit of the doubt, and you, in turn, may trust their word without any hesitation.
Groovy. Wanna meet at the same old place?
A parking lot in Lomita? Think not. Too much like your turf. It's probably been replaced with something else by now anyway. Why don't we meet this evening at my club, the Portola? He gave an address near Elysian Park.
I bet there's a dress code,
Doc said. Jacket and tie, if possible. Chapter 19. On the way over, Doc kept an eye on the rearview mirror for inquisitive El Caminos or Impalas. One of the many basic things he had failed to learn about Bigfoot was what kind of motor pool he had access to. About the time he reached the Alvarado exit, it occurred to him to start worrying about helicopters, too. Crocker Fenway's club was housed in a Moorish Revival mansion, dating from the Dahini McAdoo era. In a room off the lobby where they sent Doc to cool his heels was a mural depicting the arrival of the Portola expedition in 1769 at a bend of the river near what became downtown L.A., pretty close to here, in fact. The pictorial style reminded Doc of labels on fruit and vegetable crates when he was a kid. Lots of color, atmosphere, attention to detail. The view was northward, toward the mountains, which nowadays people at the beach manage to see only once or twice a year from the freeway when the smog blew away, but which here, through the air of those early days, were still intensely visible. Snow-topped and crystal-edged, a long string of pack mules wound into the green distance along the banks of the river, which was shaded by cottonwoods, willows, and alders. Everybody in the scene looked like a movie star. Some were on horseback, packing muskets and lances and wearing leather armor. On the face of one of them, maybe Portola himself, there was an expression of wonder like, "What's this? What unsuspected paradise? Did God with his finger trace out and bless this perfect little valley, intending it only for us?" Doc must have got lost then for a while in the panorama, because he was startled by a voice behind him. An art lover. He blinked a couple three times, turned, and saw it was Crocker, looking what they call tanned and fit, and as if somebody had just run a floor buffer all over his face.
"It's sure some picture," Doc nodded.
"Never noticed it, really. Why don't we go up to the visitor's bar? Nice suit, by the way." Nicer than Crocker knew. Doc had found it at the big MGM sell-off not long ago, having headed for it unerringly among the thousands of racks of more humdrum movie outfits that filled one of the sound stages. It was calling to him. A note pinned to it said that John Garfield had worn it in The Postman Always Rings Twice, 1946, and it turned out to fit Doc perfectly, but not wishing to compromise what mojo might still be active among its threads, Doc saw no point in telling Crocker any of this. He'd worn the Liberace necktie as well, which Crocker kept looking at, but seemed unable to comment on. Not Doc's kind of bar, really. Full of fake mission furniture and so much somber wood, you couldn't see what you were sitting on or drinking off of. Some jungle print upholstery, not to mention more colored lights, would have livened things up.
"Here's to peaceful resolution."
Crocker, raising a squat glassful of a West Highland malt made exclusively for the Portola, and angling it toward Doc's rum and coke.
A subtle reference, no doubt, to recent events out on Gummo Mark's Way. Doc beamed insincerely. So, how's the family?
If you mean Mrs. Fenway, I remain as devoted to her as I was the day she came down the aisle at St. John's Episcopal Church, looking like the gross national product. If you mean my lovely daughter Japonica, on whom I hope you are not idiot enough ever to have considered laying so much as a finger, why, she's fine. Fine. In fact, it's only because of her and our own small transaction a few years ago that I am even cutting you as much slack as I am now.
Ever so grateful, sir.
He waited till Crocker was about to swallow some scotch and said, By the way, did you ever run into a dentist named Rudy Blatnoid? With as little choking and sputtering as possible, Crocker replied,
The son of a bitch who until recently was corrupting my daughter? Yes, I do seem to recall the name. Perished in a trampoline accident or something, didn't he?
The LAPD's not so sure it was an accident.
And you're wondering if I did it. What possible motive would I have? Just because the man preyed on an emotionally vulnerable child, tore her from the embrace of a loving family, forced her to engage in sexual practices that might appall even a sophisticate like yourself, does that mean I'd have any reason to see his miserable pedophile career come to an end? What a vindictive person you must imagine me.
You know, I did suspect he was fucking his receptionist, Doc in his most innocent voice. But I mean, what dentist doesn't? It's some oath they all have to take in dentist school. And anyhow, that's a long way from strange and weird sex, isn't it?
How about when he forced my little girl to listen to original cast albums of Broadway musicals while he had his way with her? The tastelessly decorated resort hotel rooms he took her to during endodontist conventions, the wallpaper, the lamps, and I won't even get into his secret collection of vintage snoods.
Yeah, but Japonica's legal age now, isn't she?
In a father's eyes, they're always too young.
Doc took a quick glance at Crocker's eyes, but didn't see much fatherly emotion. What he did see made him thankful he decided not to smoke too much on the way over.
To the matter at hand. Those I represent are prepared to offer you a generous compensation package for the safe return of their property.
Groovy. Suppose it didn't even have to be in the form of, like, money?
Crocker, for the first time, appeared to be taken aback.
Well, money would be a lot easier.
I've been more concerned about the safety of some people.
Oh, people. Well, that would depend, I suppose, on how much of a threat they represent to my principles.
I'm thinking about those who are close to me in my life, but there's also this saxophone player named Coy Harlingen, who's been working undercover for different anti-subversive outfits, including the LAPD. He's come to feel lately that he made the wrong career choice. It lost him his family and his freedom. Like you, he has an only daughter.
Please.
Okay, well, anyway, now he wants out. I think I can square it with the heat, but there's this other bunch called Vigilant California, and whoever's running them, of course.
Oh, the Vigis, yes, a fairly contemptible lot. Useful in the street, but no political sense beyond simple hooliganism. My guess is that they'd prefer he didn't disclose any confidential information.
Last thing he'd ever do.
Your personal guarantee.
He tries anything, I'll go after him myself.
Barring surprises, then, I don't see why some amicable separation shouldn't be arranged for him. That's all you wanted? No money? Now, you're sure?
How much money would I have to take from you so I don't lose your respect?
Crocker Fenway chuckled without mirth.
A bit late for that, Mr. Sportello. People like you lose all claim to respect the first time they pay anybody rent.
And when the first landlord decided to stiff the first renter for his security deposit,
Your whole fucking class lost everybody's respect.
Ah, so you're looking for what? A refund? Plus how many years' interest? That'd be a bookkeeping issue, of course, but I expect we could come up with that.
Of course. Nothing to you. Couple $100, just something to roll up and snort coke through. But see, every time one of you gets greedy like that, the bad karma level gets jacked up one more little $200 notch. After a while, that starts to add up. For years now, under everybody's nose, there's been all this class hatred slowly building. Where do you think that's headed?
Sounds like you've been talking to His Holiness Mickey Wolfman. You've been out to have a look at Channel View Estates? Some of us moved heaven and earth, mostly earth, to keep that promise of urban blight from happening. One more episode in a struggle that's been going on for years now. Residential owners like me against developers like Brother Wolfman. People with a decent respect for preserving the environment against high-density tenement scum without the first idea of how to clean up after themselves. Bullshit, Crocker. It's about your property values. It's about being in place. Gesturing around the visitor's bar and its withdrawal into seemingly unbounded shadow, we're in place. We've been in place forever. Look around. Real estate, water rights, oil, cheap labor, all of that's ours. It's always been ours. And you, at the end of the day, what are you? One more unit in this swarm of transients who come and go without pause here in the sunny Southland, eager to be bought off with a car of a certain make, model, and year, a blonde in a bikini, 30 seconds on some excuse for a wave, a chili dog, for Christ's sake. He shrugged. We will never run out of you people. The supply is inexhaustible.
And you don't ever worry? Doc grinned back cordially. That someday they'll all turn into a savage mob screaming around outside the gates of PV, maybe even looking to get in?
Shrug. Then we do what has to be done to keep them out. We've been laid siege to by far worse, and we're still here, aren't we?
And thank heaven for that, sir.
Oh, you people do irony. I wasn't aware.
More like practicality. If you and your friends and lunch companions don't all remain in place, how will average PIs like me ever make a living? We can't get by on matrimonials and car thefts. We need those high-level felony activities you folks are so gifted at.
Yes. Well.
Crocker flicked a glance at his Patek Philippe moon phase.
Actually.
Sure. Don't want to hang you up. Where and when do we do the handoff this time?
Easy enough. Parking lot at the May Company shopping mall, out at Hawthorne and Artesia, tomorrow evening. Transfer of goods to be made only after verification that certain individuals have been allowed to go their ways unmolested. Future guarantees of personal safety not to be unreasonably withheld.
Your reputation as a fixer's on the line here, Crocker. I may not be as well connected, and for sure not as much into revenge as you folks are, but if you've been jiving with me here, my good man, I say unto you, best watch your ass.
Revenge? Protested the sensitive tycoon. Me?
Doc brought Dinas along for, well, maybe not muscle, but something like that. Some kind of protection he hadn't realized till lately he needed. A boost for his immunity against the shopping plazas of Southern California. For a desire not to desire. At least, not what you found in shopping malls.
Huh?
Said Dinas. While they were waiting for the drop and handing a joint back and forth, and Doc was trying to explain this.
So, why are you giving back that TV set?
Doc looked closely at Dinas.
Dinas, it's not a...
Dinas started giggling.
It's okay, Doc. I knew it was smack. I know you're not dealing smack and probably not making any money out of this trip tonight either.
but you should be getting something for your trouble.
I'm getting their word they won't hurt anybody. My friends, my family, me, you, a couple others.
You believe that, coming from whoever it is handles this kind of weight? Their word?
What, I should only trust good people? Man, good people get bought and sold every day. Might as well trust somebody evil once in a while. It makes no more or less sense. I mean, I wouldn't give odds either way.
Wow, Doc, that's heavy.
Dina sat there pigging on the joint as usual.
What does that mean?
He said after a while. There they are. The Golden Fang operatives were cleverly disguised tonight as a wholesome blonde California family in a 53 Buick estate wagon, the last Woody that ever rolled out of Detroit, a nostalgic advertisement for the sort of suburban consensus that Crocker and his associates prayed for day and night to settle over the Southland, with all non-homeowning infidels sent off to some crowded exile far away, where they could be safely forgotten. The boy was 6 and already looked like a Marine. His sister, a couple years older, had a possible future in drug abuse, but wasn't saying much, content to sit staring at Doc while focused inside on thoughts of her own he was just as happy not to know about. Mom and Dad were all business. Doc got out and opened the trunk.
Need a hand with this?
I'm good.
The dad had on a short-sleeved shirt which revealed, maybe by design, a complete absence of tracks. The mom was a sleek enough California blonde in a species of tennis dress, smoking some white chick filter cigarette. The smoke kept getting into one of her eyes, but she didn't bother to take the cigarette out of her mouth. When hubby had the dope stashed securely in back, she squinted Doc half a smile and held out a flat rectangle of plastic.
What's this?
A credit card,
the daughter piped up from the back seat.
Don't hippies have them?
I must have meant, why's your mom handing me this?
It isn't for you, said the mom. Doc took the object doubtfully. It seemed normal, though issued by a bank he didn't recognize right away. Then he saw Coy Harlingen's name on it, the husband watching him out of narrowed eyes.
You're supposed to tell him, well done, welcome back to the main herd, safe journeys. That's journeys, plural.
Guess I can remember that.
He noticed that Dinas was writing it down anyway. A minute or two after the Buick drove away toward Hawthorne Boulevard, Doc saw a beat-up El Camino, which could only be Bigfoot's, creeping along after them. It sounded different. Bigfoot must have put new headers in or something. But where was this tail he was on going to take Bigfoot, finally? How far in this weird, twisted cop karma would he have to follow the 20 kilos before it led to what he thought he needed to know? Which would be what, again, exactly? Who hired Adrian to kill his partner? What Adrian's connection might be to Crocker Fenway's principles? Whether the Golden Fang, which Bigfoot didn't believe in to begin with, even existed? How smart was any of it, right now, for example, without backup? And how safe was Bigfoot likely to be? And for how long?
Here,
Dina said after a while, passing a smoldering joint.
Bigfoot's not my brother,
Doc considered when he exhaled.
But he sure needs a keeper.
It ain't you, Doc.
I know.
Too bad, in a way. Chapter 20. Wedged under the kitchen door when he got back was an envelope Farley had left, with some enlargements of the film from the shindig at Channel View Estates. There were close-ups of the gunman who nailed Glenn, but none were readable. It could have been Art Tweedle under the Christmas card ski mask. It could have been anybody.
Doc got out his lens and gazed into each image till one by one they began to float apart into little blobs of color. It was as if whatever had happened had reached some kind of limit. It was like finding the gateway to the past unguarded, unforbidden, because it didn't have to be. Built into the act of return, finally, was this glittering mosaic of doubt. Something like what Sancho's colleagues in marine insurance like to call inherent vice.
Is that like original sin? Doc wondered.
It's what you can't avoid, Sancho said. Stuff marine policies don't like to cover. Usually applies to cargo like eggs break, but sometimes it's also the vessel carrying it, like why bilges have to be pumped out.
Like the San Andreas Fault, it occurred to Doc. Rats living up in the palm trees.
Well, Sancho blinked, maybe if you wrote a marine policy on L.A., considering it, for some closely defined reason, to be a boat.
Hey, how about an ark?
That's a boat, right? Ark insurance?
That big disaster Sortilege is always talking about. Back when Lemuria sank into the Pacific. Some of the people who escaped then are supposed to have fled here for safety, which would make California like a ark.
Oh, nice refuge. Nice, stable, reliable piece of real estate. Doc made coffee and punched on the tube. Hawaii 5-0 was still on. He waded through the end credits with the footage of the giant canoe, which he knew Leo liked to watch, and then rang up his parents in the San Joaquin. Elmina filled him in on the latest news.
Gilroy got promoted again. He's regional manager now. They're sending him to Boise.
They're all gonna pack up and move to Boise?
No, she'll be staying here with the kids and the house.
Uh-huh, Doc said.
Gil sure picked a Lulu, that one. Can't stay away from the bowling alley. Out dancing with Mexicans, and some of them you can't tell what they are to all hours, and of course, we are happy to sit our grandbabies, but they need their mama, too, don't you think?
They're lucky to have you guys, Ma.
I just hope when you get married, you'll be thinking a little more clearly than Gil was.
I don't know. I always tended to cut Vernix some slack because of that first husband and all.
Oh, the jailbird. He was just her type. How she ever kept out of Tehachapi herself, I'm sure I don't know.
Funny. You always sounded like your biggest fan.
Do you see much of that pretty Shasta Fay Hepworth?
Once or twice. And no harm in adding, she's living back at the beach now.
Maybe it's fate, Larry.
Maybe she needs a break from the picture business, Ma.
Well, you could do worse.
Doc could always tell when his mother was taking a beat on purpose.
And I hope you've been staying out of trouble?
Leo had been on the extension for a while.
Here we go.
I only meant...
She thinks you're dealing grass, and she wants to score some, but she's too embarrassed to ask.
Leo, now I swear...
Scuffling and thumping sounds could be heard.
Should I be calling the riot squad in?
He's never going to drop this, Elmina said. You remember our friend Oriol, who teaches junior high? She confiscated some pot the other day, and we decided we'd try a little.
How'd that go?
Well, there's this soap that we watch, Another World. But somehow we couldn't recognize any of the characters, even though we've been following them every day. I mean, it was still Alice and Rachel and that Ada, whom I have never trusted since A Summer Place, and everybody. Their faces were the same, but the things they were talking about all meant something different somehow. And meantime, I was also having some trouble with the color on the set. And then Oriol brought in chocolate chip cookies, and we started eating and couldn't stop with those. And next thing we knew, Another World had changed into a game show. And then your father came in.
I was hoping there'd be some reefer left, but those two had smoked it all up.
Bummer, said Doc sympathetically. It sounds like you're the one who wants to score, Dad.
Actually, Leo said, we were both sort of wondering.
Your cousin Scott is coming up next weekend, Elmina said. If you could find some, he says he'll be happy to bring it.
Sure. Just do me a favor, you guys.
Elmina reached down the miles of phone line to take his cheek in a pinch and wobble it back and forth once or twice. Best of the bunch. Anything, Larry.
Not when you're babysitting, okay?
Course not, growled Leo. Ain't like that we're dope fiends.
Next morning, the fire bell went off and it was Sancho.
Thought you might want to be in on this. Had a tip the Golden Fang put in last night at San Pedro, and there's been activity all night long, and this time it looks like a quick turnaround. Los Federales are making shadow and intercept noises. The firm's runabout is down at the marina, and if you drive fast, you can make it here in time.
In time to stop you from something crazy, you mean? Oh, and you might want to wear some Sperry topsiders instead of that one Huarache.
Traffic cooperated, and Doc found Sancho at Linus's tavern drinking a tequila zombie. But he didn't even have time to get one himself before the phone behind the bar rang.
For you, honey.
Mercy, the bartender, passing the phone to Sancho, who nodded once, then twice, then moving faster than Doc had ever seen him, threw a 20 on the bar and ran out the door. By the time Doc caught up with him, Sancho was down on the pier, casting off lines from a little fiberglass inboard-outboard belonging to Hardy, Gridley, and Chatfield. Sancho had the motor going, and had begun easing away from the berth in a haze of blue exhaust when Doc just managed to stagger aboard.
What am I doing on this Clorox bottle again?
You get to be the mate.
Like Gilligan? That makes you, wait a minute, the skipper?
They steered south. Gordita Beach emerged from the haze, gently flaking away in the salt breezes, the ramshackle town in a spill of weather-beaten colors, like paint chips at some out-of-the-way hardware store, and the hillside up to Dunecrest, which Doc had always thought of, especially after nights of excess, as steep, a grade everybody sooner or later wiped their clutch trying to get up and out of town on. Looking from out here, strangely flat, hardly there at all. The waves were pretty good today for this stretch of the coast. Offshore winds had slackened enough to bring some surfers out, and they waited in a line, bobbing up and down, like Easter Island in reverse, it had always seemed to Doc. Through Sancho's old binoculars, he observed a CHP motorcycle cop chasing a long-haired kid along the beach, in and out of folks trying to catch some midday rays. The cop was in full motorcycle gear, boots, helmet, uniform, and carrying assorted weaponry, and the kid was barefoot and lightly dressed and in his element. He fled like a gazelle, while the cop lumbered behind, struggling through the sand. Doc flashed how this was the time machine, and he was seeing Bigfoot Bjornsson at the outset of his career as a young cop in Gordita. Bigfoot had always hated it here and couldn't wait to get away.
This place has been cursed from the jump, he told anybody who'd listen. Indians lived here long ago. They had a drug cult, smoked toacha, which is Jimson weed. Gave themselves hallucinations, deluded themselves they were visiting other realities. Why, come to think of it, not unlike the hippie freaks of our present day. Their graveyards were sacred portals of access to the spirit world, not to be misused. And Gordita Beach is built right on top of one.
From watching Saturday night horror movies, Doc understood that building on top of an Indian graveyard was the worst kind of bad karma, though developers, being of evil character, didn't care where they built, as long as the lots were level and easy to get to. It wouldn't have surprised Doc at all to learn that Mickey Wolfman had committed this desecration himself more than once, calling down curse after curse on his already miserable soul.
They were hard to see and hard to catch hold of, these Indian spirits. You plodded along in pursuit.